The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Myers.
Welcome to Wheels Up Wednesday. 770-5633 to join in. Email Bill at BillMyersShow.com. The Facebook.com/Bill Myers Show feed is up. And, of course, podcasts also available on KMED.com and BillMyersShow.com. Catch up. Apologies, I didn't label the podcast yesterday. For some reason, I forgot about doing that. I'll get that done this morning, but, you know, 6 a.m., 7 a.m., 8 a.m., but I'd like to keep you up on various things. We're going to be talking with Secretary of State candidate Dennis Linthicum again a little bit later this morning about why he's voting no on all of the ballot initiatives that are coming up this November. And I was kind of surprised that he's also against voting for the ability to impeach a public officer. And I talked with him about that yesterday, and his reasoning is actually sound. It just isn't something I had considered. And I always like to talk with people who bend my head around in different directions, including Eric Peters. We'll be talking with him after 6:30 this morning. And you know, the trip to Ohio over the last weekend gave me the first opportunity to really drive for quite some time a more modern vehicle, because the cars that I drive, you know, I have a 2010 PT Cruiser, which we well know about. My wife's a 2006 Passat. Yes, they're modern cars, but they're relatively crude cars by today's standard, because it doesn't have all of the nanny state bings and bongs and warnings. You still have to actually drive the car. I think anti-lock brakes is about the highest amount of technology that are in these cars, because they're, you know, 14, 16, 17, 18 years old. And not to even mention the 82 diesel Vanagon Camper, which... Now, that one is a crude one. That is a crude mobile, but I love it because you actually have to drive it and pay attention to it, and no anti-lock brakes. And that's the way I grew up driving. You had to learn how to squeeze, and if you started skidding, you would have to learn how to turn into the skid. All those things that you learned in driver's ed at that point, you turn into the skid. You have to go against the... you know, your instinct to want to turn away from the skid, because that just makes it worse. And you got to learn how to squeeze, learn how to pump the brakes, all those things that anti-lock brakes ended up eliminating. So I'm driving in the rental car the 4 or 5 days that I was gone. I'm driving this 2024 Chevy Malibu, and it has all of the, you know, the bells and whistles, the lane keep assist, and it would bong at me if I was too close in front of the car in front of me. And believe me, my following distance was perfectly okay, but it would sit there and go bing, 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 you know. And so as you would come up to an intersection, if you weren't slowing down, if you weren't hitting the brakes hard enough as far as it was concerned, it started bonging at me. And let's see, it had lane assist, had I think it also had the look in my eyes. I'm not sure about that, because there were so many icons on the various dash on the screen, on the touchscreen. You'd have to be, you know, you almost need like a Rosetta Stone to drive a modern car if you haven't done a lot of that recently. I want to talk to Eric about this, because all of the various, not logos, what I mean, like the names for the buttons and what they actually do, they always have some kind of pictograph, because they can't print anything on it. Everything, you know, it can't say in English that this is the light control for dimming the dashboard lights or anything. And you can't do that. You have to have some kind of little logo on it, or pictograph, or something that's supposed to tell you that this is the dashboard light. And very few of them make actually any sense. But that's the way we are now, because you make a car for the world market. And, you know, and so it took me about a half hour fiddling around just to... you know, figure out where I was going. Okay, all right, now how do I get the mirrors to turn, right? I was even having trouble getting into the gas tank, because the gas tank, I was looking for a little release. Most of the cars that I've had for a long, long time had a little release of some sort. You go in there, you pull it back, the Toyotas and the Volkswagens, you pop that up. And I thought, all right, I'll just go into the glove compartment, and I'm going to get a copy of the owner's manual for this Chevy Malibu, 2024 Chevy Malibu. And certainly it'll tell me how to get into the gas tank, right? Oh, but no, there wasn't a owner's manual in there. I guess owner's manuals are so what, 2001, I guess. There's probably a, you know, a download you can do. So I ended up, I know you're gonna think I'm nuts, but here it is. I'm ready to fill the car up. And I had to actually go online and do a quick search, how to get into the gas tank of a 2024 Malibu, right? And I'm feeling like an idiot because I'm very mechanically adept. And I guess what they did is that they didn't have a release. You had to press extra hard on this one little spot of the gas tank cover, and then it'll pop open. But it doesn't say anything like that. There's nothing on it that says this is how you get into it. I guess you're just supposed to know these things. So Eric and I will have an interesting conversation about this and more, okay? That's always good talk for sure. 770-5633 if you wanted to join in the conversation today. This is a story that I was reading last night, and we've suspected that the phones were listening to us for a long, long time. And now we're getting more and more proof of what is something that we've always suspected for quite some time. A marketing firm, and by the way, this isn't Sky News. Sky News reporting this in Australia. Cox Media Group admits to using your phone to listen to your conversations. This report is that the marketing firm, whose clients included Facebook and Google, has privately admitted that it listens to users' smartphone microphones and then places ads based on the information that is picked up. This according to 404 Media. Cox Media Group, which is a television and radio news conglomerate, admitted in a pitch deck to investors that its active listening software uses artificial intelligence to capture real-time intent data by listening to our conversations, according to the report. Advertisers can pair this voice data with behavioral data to target in-market consumers. So you're wondering why you're sitting around there talking about, we made some great hamburgers last night when the folks were over, yada, yada, yada. And then all of a sudden, Facebook pops up ads for Carl's Jr. or something like that. You know, and you've noticed these kind of things. Or you'd be talking about did you hear Aunt Betty's diabetes is causing some problems? And then all of a sudden showing up on the ads that would be thrown at you on the screen of the phone is, the one-touch glucose meter, you know, those sort of things. Or get the patch to monitor your glucose. It's easy, you know, using your phone app, things like that. And you're thinking, it's so weird. It's like they know what they were thinking. Yeah, but they're not supposed to be listening to you, right? But yeah, they are. And we've known this for quite some time. I mean, we've known it, but there really wasn't necessarily proof about it. Anyway, the company writing in its talk to investors, that's what they call the pitch deck, that they pair the voice data of people talking with their behavioral data to target the ads for them. Cox Media Group noting that in the deck that consumers leave a data trail based on their conversations and online behavior, and that the AI-powered software collects and analyzes the behavioral and voice data from 470 sources. Wow! Now, Google ended up taking Cox Media Group from its Partners Program website after it was contacted by these various media groups to comment on this matter. A Google spokesperson telling the Post that all advertisers must comply with all applicable laws and regulations as well as our Google Ads policies. And when we identify ads or advertisers that violate these policies, we'll take appropriate action. Now, Google, I guess, is thinking that you'll be assuaged by this and, oh, you're going to get rid of those bad meanies, Cox. I would venture a guess that they're all doing some variation of this, though, folks. I really would. Now, the parent company of Facebook and Instagram, which is Meta, admitted that it was reviewing the Cox Media Group to see whether it had violated any of its terms of service. Meta does not use your phone's microphone for ads, and we've been public about this for years, a Meta spokesperson told the Post. But you see, that's probably a deceptive way of making you feel a little better. Well, at least I know that Facebook and Instagram is not doing this. No. Facebook and Instagram probably would then buy or have a partnership with the Cox Media Group type people. You see how that goes? It's sort of like the federal government telling you, we're not censoring you. We're not censoring you when you have bad think that goes against the regime's desires of what you should be thinking. We just have Facebook or Meta or, well, it used to be Twitter or some other social media company. We have some high-tech titan do it for us under the guise of, this is a really nice Section 230 type of company that you have here, nice social media. It'd be a shame if something happened to it, wouldn't it? You'd be happy to work with us, right? Of course you would. So Meta doesn't use your microphone for the ads. But yeah, they'll use other companies using the microphone on your behalf for the ads. But anyway, an Amazon spokesperson also told this 404 media company that its advertising arm has never worked with Cox Media Group on this program and has no plans to do so. And the company said it would take action against any partner that violates its rules. So, in other words, you're going to be hearing a lot from the high-tech world over the coming weeks of shocked. We're absolutely shocked that this has been going on, that there has been skullduggery, that we're going against our terms of service, like anyone ever reads the terms of service. The one thing you need to keep in mind, though, is that buried within all of those terms of service agreements that we all click, yes, I agree to the terms, because it's about 97 pages of tiny print that you would need a JD to be able to decipher and understand. I understand how this works, but buried within a lot of those terms of services are no doubt many little back doors into getting access to your microphone. And I have not had much of a problem with that on my Android phone. It's nothing particularly because it's an Android phone. It's just the type of phone I've had for a number of years. I've not noticed a lot of that, me talking and seeing the ads show up. But on the other hand, I have my microphone turned off for most all activities. And if you have the opportunity, not that I'm any high-tech guru, I am no Kim Komando, certainly not as cute as she is. But Kim talks about that a lot on Komando.com, and I'd be willing to bet that she's got some stuff up about this on Komando. I'll have to take a look a little bit later. But some of the ways that you can fight this trend of them wanting to listen to you at all times is to not use the voice-activated features in your phone. And I know that is a lot more inconvenient. But, if you're looking for a little bit, some modicum of privacy, I would be, using the keyboard a little more often, I think, might be helpful. Although, it's a pain in the butt. It's a lot more convenient just to be able to say, Alexa, Siri, whatever, go ahead and call so-and-so. Now, some of the ways I think you can do this involve removing permissions. You go into the Android settings section, and you find the part of it that talks about permissions. And there's a section in there under permissions, and you can go to the various ones. And what I did is that I started looking at all of the programs on my phone that had access to the microphone. Now, there's a couple of microphone-enabled apps that I actually use to record audio on the go that I'll sometimes send to the radio station. It's there as an emergency. If I had to put a report, I could put something on my phone, send it to the radio station, and get it on the air. It's an actual recorder and an editor. And so, I had enabled the microphone for it, but only when I'm using the app. Firefox wanted access to my microphone. And I said, yeah, but you ask me every time. There's other sort of settings you can do on that. I don't use Google for search, so I completely eliminated access to Google for my microphone. And believe me, it likes to whine and complain a lot. There's a lot on your phone that just won't work unless you let us use your microphone all the time. And I didn't care. No, I'm not giving it up to Google. Facebook wanted access to the microphone. And as I said, no. And most of the time, I just shut it down. I just gave access or permission to the apps that I think we're mostly deserving of it. But every time, though, I ask that the only one that I left wide open for the microphone was the phone function, because that's what I would use it for the most part. Other than that, everything else, I locked it down, or that you had to ask me every time. And I did let Google Maps access my microphone, but every time it had to ask me each time it wanted to access that. So, you know, doing my best to lock it down. I haven't had a lot of at least weird stuff that I talk about that ends up showing up on the ads. I haven't had a lot of that, you know, for a while. I don't know if it's due to that or the fact that they look at me as a 63-year-old male who's a white guy and we hate you anyway. So, you know, why would we want to serve you up anything? We don't want you dealing with our companies. I don't know. That's probably more conspiracy theory Thursday fodder than you know, than for Wheels Up Wednesday. But there are some ways to fight back. But yeah, it does mean that you have to make your phone less user friendly. Less user friendly. I think that's just the way it goes. And I think the price is worth it. So yeah, Cox Media Group admits to using the phone to listen to your actual conversations. Yeah, what could go wrong with something like that? You could see where, and once again, the federal government wouldn't actually surveil you, but they would just have Homeland Security partners in the private sector, like Cox Media Groups, for example, and the 470 other sources that they were talking about in that story. And that's how they do it. Isn't that great? Yeah, that's the way it really works. Life really works. 27 after 6, you're on the Bill Myers Show.
Rev up your engines, folks. American Rentier Garage is putting on the brakes this season, ending the high.
Hi, I'm Corey with Patriot Electric, and I'm on KMED.
629. Glad you're here. 770-5633. About 102 for today. Yeah, I'm kind of over the heat, but we got a few more days of it. Then a cool down starts on the weekend, if you want to call it that. Then we're back to normal by next week. Vicky's out of the Applegate. How are you doing this morning, Vicky? What's going on?
Good. It's nice and cool. I kind of see some like smoky haze, though. Is there a fire somewhere?
Yeah, it must be the one in Klamath County. What was it called? The Copperfield fire? Yeah, that's the one. I was talking with State Senator Linthicum about that yesterday, asking him if it was anywhere close to him. And he said 17 miles away. So,
ooh,
yeah, not too bad. But we're all watching that.
Winds stay calm. It may go slow, but boy, when that wind picks up, it's not a good thing.
Yeah, darn straight. Hey, what's going on with you, though? What are you thinking?
Oh my gosh, Bill, you're cracking me up this morning.
How's that?
You were talking about your phone.
Mm-hmm.
So, as you probably, I don't know if you remember or not, but we don't have cell service at my house. And my phone is, what did you call it? Unuser friendly or something? It doesn't even recognize me half the time.
It doesn't, huh?
No, okay. Because I don't use it very often, and I play games on it at night, and when I do go to town, oh my God, I get to, like, Jacksonville going the back way from Sterling Creek, and it's ding, 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 you know, and most of it's for my games. So I went in there, and I have no idea about the cell phone. I'm like, only when I'm using the app.
Yeah, you have to turn everything off. Yeah, otherwise it'll just peck you to death. And if you notice how every website now wants to be able to send you notifications at all times, I said, no way in hell, go away.
Yeah, how do you turn off, like, when you turn the mobile on, then you get all these like little snippets of news or whatever's going on around the world.
Yeah. Is it iPhone or an Android? You got?
It's an Android.
Android, yeah. There are obviously some there, you know, if you go and look in the systems, there are obviously some news feeds that are being sent to you, probably through the browser, could be through the internet program on that. Yeah, there's a bunch of them. I had to shut them all down because they all want to just send you and feed you stuff completely to get you clicking.
And when you try and shut something down, it says, oh, well, it won't keep data, or you can lose some of your, you know, like photos or your this or that. So I am like actually terrified of my cell phone.
Oh, no.
I don't know what to push. I don't know what to, you know, when my daughter comes every year, I say, Ashley, clean this up for me. Take all that stuff off. How do I do this?
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous. And I've had the phone for, oh my gosh, probably 10 years now, you know, but I'm so un-user friendly. I should get a t-shirt that says that.
Yeah. On the other hand, they do make it so difficult, you have to be so proactive about shutting down access to things. You might want to really head over to commando.com. Kim Commando does that great show Saturday morning here.
Yeah. I listen to her.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And I would venture a guess that she has just do a little search there, and she might be able to help you clean some of that up. And I've listened to her enough that I know some of what, but I have not gotten completely vigilant on it yet. But the Cox Media article, you know, saying the Cox Media Group was surveilling everybody in their private conversations, not surprising, but it was kind of denied for all these years. But yeah, you knew better. You'd see weird things pop up. All right. Hey, great hearing from you. Thanks, Vicki. And hopefully you can remove the fear of the phone, okay?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Okay, we'll talk to you later. Let me go to line two. Hey, good morning, line two. Who's this? Welcome.
This is Miner Dave.
Hello, Dave. Your phone is probably, what, 40 years old, right? So you don't have to worry about
that. No. I got an S24 brand new one right now.
Okay.
I upgraded. What I wanted to say was with U.S. Cellular, there's a place in there where you can say, don't sell my information, and it says do not sell. Mm-hmm. And if you click on with that, they won't. Your phone company won't sell your information.
Well, that's kind of cool. Make sure to do that, right?
Right. And I learned it from a U.S. Cellular guy. He says if you don't want them selling the information, he showed me how to do it. And you have to. It's easier to do it through the app.
Yeah, it would still be better them that it not be collecting the information in the first place. But, you know, a fella can dream, can he?
Yeah, well, I had a VPN from Google, but they took it out of the thing I'm doing. So I got to find a new VPN, and I'm not sure which one to go with.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, I get it. I appreciate the call there, Dave. Be well. It is 6:35. We'll talk with Eric Peters here in just a moment. Let me grab another call before I get Eric on. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
Deplorable Patrick Bill. I got to talk fast because I'm at work or supposed to be.
Okay, DP, hey, what's up?
I'm hearing about all these plans that the Democrats have about lockdown for this flu, that flu, the other. Mm-hmm. Is there any chance, is it practical and workable to make Jackson County a sanctuary county against lockdowns?
Hmm. You know, it comes right down to it. I think it's perfectly practical because, let's just think about it, because the state has told us that we can't do anything about illegal immigration, et cetera, et cetera. It's deciding to say, you know, give the big middle finger to the federal government on various law enforcement. We already did it on drugs, you know that. So could we do it? Of course. Would we have to be willing to go to the mat for it? Yeah. Would it be technically illegal? Probably. But, you know, it's a matter of how big a boy are you? Okay? How about that?
We need to resist the king. Hey, I wonder if Colleen Roberts would have something to his opinion, views on that.
Yeah, I might just ask her about that. Just come on, we talk about such matters, because I'll tell you, they were really irritated last time. And isn't it interesting that going into another election cycle and all of a sudden, oh, if it's not MPOX, oh, we're starting to see rising levels of cases. But that's okay, Deplorable. I use Pfizer-Mectin, okay? It's pretty easy.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Bill. I'll be listening. Thank you.
Okay, you too. 6:37. Wheels Up Wednesday. Eric Peters joins me shortly.
Ben Franklin once said, when the well is dry, we know the worth of water.
.com/free.
This is the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED. Call Bill now, 541-770-5633. That's 770-KMED.
Last week it was Crazy Train. Today it's Ozzy and Shot in the Dark instead. But one way or the other, we're just shooting straight. Eric Peters, automotive journalist and genius at epautos.com for Wheels Up Wednesday. Eric, welcome back. How you doing today?
Oh, well, I'm pretty good. I've recovered from having to deal with unresponsive driver support.
Unresponsive. Oh, that's one of your articles on epautos.com.
Yeah.
Unresponsive driver support. what could this deal? That's one that I don't think it was up there last night. I didn't get a chance to read it, or else maybe I just missed it. What happened?
Yeah, well, I discovered this nugget while I was reading the press materials for one of the vehicles that I was driving, which was the Mazda CX-70. Pardon me, I have had too much coffee today rather than too little. And in it, I discovered this thing, this unresponsive driver support thing. And what it is what we expected was coming. It is essentially the next piece of advanced driver assistance technology. It is the technology that will punish you if you thwart the advanced driver assistance technology by pulling the car off to the side of the road and shutting it off.
What?
Yeah, if you are unresponsive, which means disobedient. For example, you have put a piece of tape over the driver eye movement monitor.
Oh, that was the camera thing you were talking about the other week. Yeah, okay.
Yes.
All right. So
something like that. Like, this is where it's going. You know, if you know, a lot of people, we all complain about all of these technologies that are oh so very advanced that they keep putting in all of these cars, despite the fact that nobody seems to want this stuff. Well, we all try to turn it off, and we all try to figure out ways to deprogram it or evade it or shut it off. Well, now they've come up with a technology that if you do that, it will be considered unresponsive. The superficial claim is, oh, you had a stroke or you're disabled or something. When in fact, what they mean is you're disobedient. You're trying to actually drive the car rather than let the car drive you. And at that point, the system intervenes and it stops the car from being drivable anymore.
Oh, so it will pull it over to the side is what it will do. Okay.
Yeah, and by the way, I have some inside baseball. I have a colleague who shall remain unnamed who's within the car business right now.
In other words, this person is leaking the information, the straight scoop to you.
It's a deep throat kind of a situation.
Yeah.
And what they're working on as the next step is that the thing will lock the doors and call first responders in such an event.
Oh, okay. So when your Tesla is on fire, and then the unresponsive driver's support thing is binging and bunging because it's not able to see you because of the smoke filling the cabins because of the lithium ion battery, then the Tesla will then lock you inside to keep you safe until first responders come out and I guess after they put the fire out in a day or two, take your lifeless corpse out of it, right?
This would be funny if it weren't so very serious. You know, they are now at the point where they are going to bare their fangs and overtly exercise control. It won't be just the rap on the knuckles scolding. It will be something a little bit more heavy than that.
Which is, once again, turning many people to picking up older cars. I can't tell you how many listeners have written me. Many times I forward their emails over to you, in which they're asking, looking for vehicles that are reliable, some work truck for my business or whatever it is, but I don't want to be monitored for the surveillance state as part of this.
Yeah, and it's not just a few outliers. The high of annual vehicle sales in this country was reached a couple of years ago. It was 17 million, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's now down to around 15 million or so. So it's a significant drop. And, of course, price has something to do with it. The economy and inflation have something to do with it.
Sure.
But I don't doubt for a moment that a lot of people are just saying, I don't want any part of this anymore.
Yeah. And this is sad because I told you about it, how I was going to my high school reunion over the weekend. And I ended up getting together with my friend Bob Orpin, who was forcibly retired, forced out of the General Motors system. I think he was with Tenneco or, one of the suppliers that was with. And, of course, a lot of the people in the Midwest in Ohio, a lot of them worked for some form of Ford or General Motors as part of their job.
Yep.
They did a great job, hired a lot of people. Well, he had worked for Chrysler before Stellantis, so he had worked for Chrysler. He knew about that. His son is still working for the modern iteration of Stellantis, and they were talking with me how there is such a compliance cost that the company is almost forced to be circling the drain. It's what he was telling me. You know, as we were sitting around shooting the breeze about it, everything you and I have been talking about. And they also suspect that they don't want Americans to be mobile, except mobile under the command of the state, the control of the state, whether it's transportation as a service or you're on the grubby bus, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I caught something very interesting the other day, which was a statement made by Carlos Tavares, who's the current CEO of the Stellantis Group. And he said there's no longer a car market. What there is a state-imposed supply chain. And I thought that was rather honest of him to say that openly.
Very much so. Very much so. And you just have to wonder why. Why are they so intent on that?
Well, I think, you know, we've brooded about that many times. The reason is obvious. You know, if you haven't got the freedom to travel on your own, then you're not very free. And that's part of that's the main reason why they want to dispense with personally controlled vehicles.
Yeah. Are there enough people left that would actually rebel against such commands? Those are the questions that that run through my head practically on a daily basis. You know, another aspect of the trip, though, is that, you know, both the vehicles or the three vehicles I have are relatively vintage. You know, 2010 Chrysler, 2006 Volkswagen, and a 1982 Volkswagen, as you're, you know, well aware of there. And none of them have that real drive, you know, all that nanny state stuff in it other than, you know, anti-lock brakes. That's about as high as the technology goes, or maybe traction control on some of the, you know, on some of the newer ones. For the first time, though, I had the chance to drive for a few hundred miles a modern car, and it was a 2024 Chevy Malibu that I rented out of Hopkins, and it was sitting there and nagging at me quite a bit off and on, and especially didn't like the idea that I didn't slam on the brake three blocks ahead of the red light where the traffic was stopped.
Yep.
Because, you know, it's sitting there and monitoring the following distance. Now, I've been monitoring my own following distance for, 48 years, you know.
Without problem, right?
Yeah, exactly. And what it considers the safe following distance doesn't really portend to reality out there. They would have everybody.
Well, it's actually very unsafe because the thing will apply the brakes when it's not necessary, and all of a sudden you find your car is dramatically slowing down, and the car behind you might not have been anticipating it, and that's a great recipe for a rear-end accident.
Yeah, so it would sit there. At this point, though, it was only flashing the light. That's all it had. I don't know if there was another setting. It would flash the light if you were too close is what it would do, you know, that kind of thing. But it had the lane keep you in the right lane or the proper lane assist technology.
Oh, call it assistance, because they want to make it sound like you're an incompetent and need assistance keeping your car in its lane.
Yeah, exactly. Had that. And it was the four-cylinder compliance transmission. It had the CVT.
Yep.
And this is the first time I really drove a CVT for a long time, and I'm not a fan. I really am not a fan of the CVT. Oh, by the way, it had ass also. I had to push the button every time I start the car. To turn off, you know, the automated start stop, and a lot of things. And I mean, it was a perfectly competent car. You know, I can't say anything wrong about that. But boy, the CVT. There's something about the CVT which they put in everything now that feels like it's going to blow up at 20,000 miles. There's something. There's a groan. There's a lack of smoothness that the standard automatic transmission has that the CVT does not.
You can almost visualize the rubber band stretching, can't you?
Yeah, you really can. And the CVT really is a compliance transmission, just to eke another, half mile a gallon out of the...
It's a little more than that. It's typically about 2 to 3 miles per gallon. But I think the take-home point here is the question that's begged and never answered is, why are these CVTs practically now the standard transmission in most vehicles that have automatic transmissions? Who asked for this? What's the advantage? Well, there is no advantage from the standpoint of the car buyer. You've got a more fragile transmission that has strange operating characteristics versus a geared automatic with speeds as opposed to ranges that vary. Because the only reason is it's a compliance transmission. You know, these manufacturers are trying to squeeze out a small increase in gas mileage to satisfy the federal regs. And the CVT does do that. It's a little bit more efficient in that way. But you pay the cost for that, including the cost of the decreased reliability of these CVTs relative to the geared automatics.
It's really weird when you stomp it to really give a get up and go, because it kind of does that kind of like it's hunting. It's hunting for the right range, like the you know, and it sounds kind of weird. I suppose you get used to it after a while, and then just becomes
sure you can get used to practically anything after a while, right? But for people listening who want to kind of visualize how it works, just imagine two drums connected by a belt, and the diameter varies. You know, they go in and out, and that alters the effective leverage or the range, and that's how it works. And the reason that the CVTs tend not to be so reliable is because over time that band or belt that connects those two drums from expansion and contraction, you get metal fatigue, and then the band snaps. And of course, when it snaps, the transmission is moving, everything's moving, and those metal fragments go everywhere inside the transmission, and that's it for the transmission.
And that's when you see all those guys that rebuild transmissions on YouTube, right? They do that, and they'll take apart mm-hmm. those CVTs, blown apart. It's quite interesting, quite interesting. The one thing they are saying that if you get a vehicle with a CVT, change the fluid way more often than the factory recommends. They really do.
Yeah, well, that's true across the board, whether you have a CVT or a conventional automatic, and that also applies to things like differentials and so on. You know, people are really being sold a bill of goods when they hear, oh, it's lifetime maintenance, or, you know, it's 100,000 miles maintenance. Sure.
Yeah, that means it's the lifetime of the transmission or the engine, right?
That's exactly right. Because they want to sell you on that. You know, they want to make you think, oh, I'm buying this vehicle, and it's got very low maintenance costs. They don't tell you about the very high repair costs after the warranty is over.
You got to love it, because once again, it's a state-mandated supply chain. It's what the Stellantis guy said, mm-hmm. right? I love that. I'm going to have to remember that. I'm going to have to remember it. Eric Peters with me, epautos.com. By the way, if you'd like to ask Eric a question or comment on anything we've been talking about, maybe share your experience, 770-5633. We'll do more of that in just a second.
I'm Bill Baines.
You're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
With Eric Peters, epautos.com, talking about transportation politics, all the intersection of same on Wheels Up Wednesday. Any guy who calls himself Lunatic Fringe, he gets to the front of the line. Hello, Lunatic. You're with Eric. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Bill. I'm curious, when the command control computer puts on the brakes, do the brake lights come on?
That's a good question, Eric. Do you know?
I would assume so. It is a good question. I've never been able to actually be behind the car to see, but I would imagine so, unless they actually haven't thought of that, which isn't beyond the realm of possibility.
In other words, we're going to go out and find out here, Lunatic, so we can't say for sure. But I'll bet you they are. Of course, are most of these with brake pedal position, or is it maybe with line pressure when there's pressure inside the brake system, you know, that shows that pressure is being applied?
You know, everything today is controlled remotely, electronically, via computers and body control modules. It's almost certainly not just a simple switch anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, switch is so simple, so 1990, you know, that kind of thing. Let me go to Bob. Hello, Bob. You're with Eric. What's on your mind?
Good morning, Bill. Good morning, Eric. You know, beginning in the late 50s, the automotive industry really kind of paralleled, you know, the aircraft industry with the fins and the dashboards and things like that. And then in the 70s, when the aircraft industry took a decline, we got more people from Boeing working in the auto industry. So that influence has been there. Some of it good, like disc brakes and mm-hmm. things of that
sure.
sort. But I think our third itineration, mm-hmm. the automotive industry, is becoming the industry of the mad scientist.
That's an interesting way of looking at that. You ever consider that, Eric? Huh? Mad scientist instead?
Well, the thing that strikes me is that there is a parallel here with the aviation industry. You guys can probably remember when it was absolutely feasible for a middle class or even a working class guy to buy himself a small private airplane and to fly it.
Yeah.
You know, you could pick up something like that. It was a comparable cost to buying something like a Corvette. Expensive, yeah, but not out of hand. Now forget about it. You pretty much have to be an affluent, rich person in order to be able to afford a private airplane.
Mm. You know, you can't help but see a lot of that breakdown occurring after the early 1970s when the U.S. dollar was divorced from any kind of tether. You know, and I know we're getting into economics at this point with mm-hmm. rejection of the gold standard and going in as a fiat currency, et cetera. But I think it's all connected for sure. Thank you for the call there, Bob. Let me go to line three. Hi, good morning. You're on with Eric. Who's this? Welcome. Hello?
Good morning. That was quick. Hello, Bill. Can you hear me? This
sure.
is Peter.
Hey, Peter. What's on your mind? You're with Eric.
Well, I have to say I'm a fan. I'm a longtime automotive enthusiast. I love your segments with Eric. And I think in honor of this and other recent conversations, and I don't know how else to frame it, so I'm just going to blurt it out. You need some bumper music for him, and I would like to nominate Rush's Little Red Barchetta from A Better Managed Time.
Yeah, I think that may become your permanent bumper then, Eric. What would you say to that?
Well, huh? Bill, I'm not opposed to that, but I've long wanted to have the tune from, do you remember the Chrysler Cordova commercials from the 70s with Ricardo Montalban?
Oh, with
remember they had that Spanish tune that was in the background.
Oh, yeah, they reached Corinthian leather.
That
right?
one. I've always wanted to have that bumper for myself.
Okay, well, I'll try to have both available, Peter. Is that okay? Would that be good then?
I appreciate it. And as a supporting comment, I have also recently sold three older vehicles and recently acquired three older vehicles to replace the older ones that I've sold. I am not sold on the new tech. I have some trust issues. Sometimes I can be an early adopter when I believe the technology is truly a benefit to my life. But if I can tack along in an older pushrod V8 or V6, tacking 2,000 RPM at 75 miles an hour, pulling 5,000 pounds very confidently down the road, I want to see a new vehicle that can do that without blowing up, because I know those new twin turbo V6s can.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Point well taken. Hey, thanks for the call, Peter. Appreciate that. Speaking of, that was the review from last week. You were talking about Toyota, the V6, the twin turbos, which, having some questions on reliability on that one. What was the latest, though? What's the Mazda? Mazda was the latest one you test drove, right?
Yeah. The XC70, which is essentially the same vehicle. It's a crossover as the CX-90 that Mazda brought out last year. And you might remember that Mazda bucked the trend by putting a six-cylinder engine in it as standard, not a little four-cylinder engine, but a six-cylinder engine. So it's laudable on that score. It has essentially the same drivetrain. It just has one less row. Now, I don't know why they didn't just offer the CX-90 in a two-row form and call it the two-row version or whatever, but they decided to separate it out as its own model.
What was your overall impression of it?
That's great. It's a fantastic vehicle. The thing that particularly sells me is that inline six-cylinder engine, which I love it in principle, too, the idea that they for once didn't downsize the engine. And maybe other manufacturers will look at that and say, maybe that's not such a bad idea.
I noticed that today you just put a brand new article up, though, about the $71,000 Accord. And is this the only Accord we're going to be able to buy in the near future, or was this just a special article? Like I said, it's so new, I didn't get a chance to read it this morning.
No. It's a snarky headline. I compared the Lucid Air with the Honda Accord because they're both very essentially the similar kinds of cars. They're mid-sized sedans, almost exactly the same length. The difference
I see. This is a Lucid. Oh, Lucid's a car.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry. That's how I messed it up.
That's okay. And the thrust of the article was just the frustrating disingenuousness of the car press, which is supposed to explain things to people. I caught this review of the Lucid Air that Car and Driver had posted. And they just sort of mentioned that, the thing advertises 420 miles of range, but we only got 300 out of it. And they didn't even use that language. They just stated it and then drove right on, and not commenting on the fact that this vehicle delivered 25% less than its advertised range.
Could you imagine, though, if anybody in their Ford truck or their Kia and everything else, if it got 25% less gas mileage than what they advertised, what was on the sticker and everything else, people would be livid. They'd be going out there with pitchforks and torches, right? They'd be going nuts on that.
Not only would the manufacturer probably be obliged to buy back the vehicles, there would be a federal inquisition, and the car press would be at the head of the inquisition saying, what's this all about? You're ripping people off.
And so the car press has bought
it. About it.
So the car press is bought off, you're saying, then, essentially by the green electric vehicle agenda. They're all bought off then.
I'm not sure whether bought off is right or whether they've just been so saturated with politically correct types that it doesn't even occur to them to offer any commentary about this. But at the end of the day, they're just not telling people what they fundamentally should be telling people,
okay.
In my opinion.
71,000 Accord. Read it right now and get the whole gist there on epautos.com. We'll grab one more call here before we cut Eric loose for his day job. Hi, who's this? Good morning.
Hi, Bill, Joe, and Stryker.
Hey, Joe.
And, hey, good morning.
Morning.
Hey, brake lights on auto braking. Yes, they do come on.
They do come on then when it does the automatic brake? Okay.
Yeah, even semi-tractors.
Yeah. Yeah, bam. Sorry about that, Joe. Your cell's cutting out there. Sorry about that, but I think we got the main point of that, all right? I appreciate the affirmation. Good to know. Good to know that it automatically brakes and people know it's automatically braking behind you. It's a good thing. Hey, Eric, I wanted to just mention something else. Like I said, the rental car that I had over the weekend, perfectly competent car, nothing wrong with that. It did everything fine, that it was supposed to. But One thing that has bothered me is that nothing on the cars are intuitive as far as what the buttons mean, because they don't put anything written out any longer. There's all a bunch of little pictographs or hieroglyphics of one sort or another. And I remember it took me a while to get used to European cars because, okay, here's the small light. Okay, that's the parking lights. Then the big light is the headlight, you know, and you start figuring that out after a while. But I got to tell you, between that and the big touchscreen and having to do a lot of the settings through the touchscreen there, there's not a lot that's going on intuitively. And I think you're going to laugh about this one. So remember, I told you it was a 2024 Chevy Malibu. Mm-hmm. And I could not figure out how to get the gas door open because I was looking for a little flap, a little lever to hit, or a button to punch, and then all of a sudden the thing opens up, right? And then I thought, well, I can't figure this out. Now, I've been driving cars for 48 years, right? Never had any trouble with this one. And so I thought, I'll just go to the owner's manual in the glove box and look that up. And so I opened up the glove box. Of course, there's no owner's manual in there. I guess owner's manual is also so 2010.
You got to scan your code.
Yeah, exactly. And so I'm having to look up online how to open the gas. There actually was a YouTube video, how to open the gas door on your 2024 Malibu, because I guess other people had had the same problem. And it was one of those things where, and there was nothing on the gas door that said it, but you had to push hard in one little corner of it, and then it would pop out. All right. Fine.
Right.
But, nothing is intuitive there. It's not like you can just get into any of these things, and they don't include a manual any longer. So, I don't know. Have you ever talked much about that?
And they're not tactile either. You know, physical controls, for example, even with an automatic transmission that has even if it's a drive-by-wire gear selector, but you push it forward and it engages park.
Right.
And that's something that you don't have to look at in order to know that park is engaged. Now a lot of cars will have a little button that you push, which has no feedback at all. So really the only way to make sure that you actually are in park and it's not still in drive is to confirm it by looking at whatever the display is in the dashboard.
Hmm.
And it's all just a cost-saving thing. You know, they're putting all of these icons and tap-swipe menus into touchscreens all in one place, following the Tesla model. And ironically, at the same time, they tell you, pay attention to safety. You know, don't text and drive, but it's okay to tap and swipe the big cell phone that's in the car.
Yeah, you're having to sit there and search all over it. You know, you just want to turn the fan up and say, no, I have to hit the right little part of the screen for the fan to go on. You know, all that kind of
Isn't
stuff.
Isn't it great?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love it. Also, I love the new iterations where they end up hiding the parking brake, in various other places, because they're now just little switches. And, okay, so I push one direction, and it goes one way, and pull up, and then it goes. Yeah, it was an interesting experience. It really was. I can understand some of the confusion going out there in auto and truck land these days.
Yeah, and it's interesting for me because each week I have to deal with a new vehicle from a different manufacturer, and I have to decrypt the hieroglyphics and figure out how to do even the most basic things. You know, this gas cap thing, don't you remember to use the language of that Rush Red Barchetta song, The Better Vantage Time, when you just opened up the fuel filler door, and it was the same on every vehicle.
You just opened it up, yeah. In this case, though, it had the, just like a little flapper, you just tucked the nozzle and you shoved it into it, that thing. And like I said, it worked fine. But you would think that even maybe just a little note on the door, press to release filler door, something like that. I don't know. That might have cost a dime or something like that. It might have cut into the Chevrolet profit margin. Hard to say.
Yeah, on some of the hood catches, by the way, you'd think, okay, there's the release, the lever that's underneath the dash, and you pull on it. But that you actually have to do it twice in order for the locking mechanism to decouple.
Oh, okay. Good point. Good to know.
Some people will do it once, thinking they latch unlatch the catch because they'll see the hood rise a little bit, but they still can't get the thing open.
Yeah,
it's because they weren't advised that you have to pull it twice to unlock completely.
Like I said, though, first time in my life I ever had to go online to find out how to get the fuel door open, and you would have thought, I just wonder, do the engineers and the car companies drive their own vehicles? Do they ever drive them? It's just kind of like
everything is compartmentalized now. Back in the day, you would probably have like a single engineer who was responsible largely for a given engine or great chunks of it. Now they have very, very small tasks that relate to a much greater whole that they're not really privy to.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. All right, we'll grab one more call. Hi, good morning. You're with Eric. Who's this?
Hey, Bill, don't punish me. I'd like exemption number RB22 for two calls.
Oh. Okay, go ahead.
Hey, it's Joe. Yeah, the brake lights, I was saying, the semi-trucks forever now, when the Jake brake comes on, those also activate the tail lights, brake lights.
Yes.
Okay, so anyway, CTV transmissions. Bomb-bombs of the air. I've been using those for, 70 years now in snow machines.
They have, huh?
Yeah. Well, yeah. All snow machines use them.
All right. Maybe the CVT and the Bombardier is much more stout, though, than what's in that vehicle I was driving.
Well, basically, it's just two pulleys on the, on the snow machines.
Yeah. All right. All right, Joe. I appreciate
it. Lasts a long time.
So it's not that the CVT is a bad technology, but maybe the way these ones are being designed is. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it's not as good a technology.
Because they
in an automotive application.
Okay. All right. Got it. What was that, Eric? I'm sorry.
Bye.
It's in an automotive application. It's not a steady kind of a speed situation. You've got different torque loads and horsepower and all of this other stuff. And the bottom line is they are just not as good. And this is not an opinion. It's an accepted fact. They're not as good in terms of durability, longevity than geared automatics. And that begs the question, well, why are we going with the worst technology rather than the better technology?
Yeah,
and the answer is because this is a compliance transmission, and that's it.
All right. I know that Dusty's, the folks over at Dusty's Transmission say that they indeed, one of my sponsors here, they do say that they need a lot more maintenance to be able to be, reliable out there. You got to do a lot more work on them, and that's just their experience on it. So,
and drive them more gingerly because they just don't stand up as well to spirited driving than a geared automatic does.
All right. So I guess that's why it's in a rental car. Anyway, hi, KMED, and you're on with Eric Peters. Who's this? Good morning.
Hey, Bill and Eric, Jeff and Selma. Hey.
Hello, Jeff. Go ahead.
Being a Buckeye myself, what's those fuel door latch is going to do once the salt gets to them?
It's a very good point. He's right.
I have no idea.
These mechanisms potentially will freeze up on you at some point, and then what?
Yeah, exactly. When you're looking for it to press in just the right spot, and you hope that the salt and the grit hasn't gotten into the mechanism, that's what it's going to be, Jeff. I think that's it. All right?
Have a great day, guys.
All right, you too. Eric, great talk as always. Always appreciate it. What do you think is going to be the review for next week, a vehicle in the driveway?
Oh, I know. I'm trying to keep track of these things so that I don't have no answer for you when you ask me this question every week. And it's a good one. It's going to be the Toyota 86, which, of course, is a Subaru VRC sold by Toyota. Both great cars, and we can get into why each of these manufacturers is selling essentially the same car next week.
A Toyota what? I'm not familiar with this model. Please.
A Toyota GR86.
GR86.
Okay. Yes, if you're familiar with the Subaru BRZ, which is the company's sports car, and it's the only Subaru you can still get with a manual, by the way, well, Toyota sells the same thing as the GR86. It has the same engine. It's essentially the same car, slightly different exterior styling, but fundamentally the same car, kind of similar to back in the day when you had the Chevrolet Camaro and the Pontiac Firebird, except, of course, now we're talking not about divisions within the same company, but two entirely different car companies sharing basically the same car.
Boy, that's an interesting automotive bedfellow, really.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And, the reason why is because it's too expensive. The compliance costs are too high for even Toyota, which is a massive car company, to go ahead on its own and to design and build its own unique sports car. It's less expensive for them in terms of compliance to essentially use the Subaru sports car because the Subaru car is already compliant. And, put some Toyota styling tweaks on it, price it a little bit differently, and bada-bing, bada-bing, there you go.
Wasn't there something like this with General Motors and Toyota a number of years ago? I seem to recall, was it a Toyota Tercel? And there was a Toyota Tercel and some iteration of it. Was it the Geo Metro of some sort?
Oh, yeah, there was the Pontiac Vibe, which was,
that's it.
What was that?
Yeah.
That was the Toyota, what was that? That was... It was a Toyota too. I can't remember which particular model it was. But what's really unique now is that they're sharing development costs on drivetrains. You may be aware of the fact that the 10-speed transmission that Ford puts in a lot of its vehicles and that GM puts in a lot of its vehicles, it's the same transmission.
I did not know that. Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess this is one way that you keep kind of the cost down. And if you come up with a reliable transmission, well, if anything, that just makes it easier to maintain them too, really.
Yeah, well, and you can see where this is trending, though. Eventually, you know, it's going to winnow out a lot of the currently remaining brands of cars, and you'll have consolidated Government Motors to get us back to Carlos Tavares' point.
Yeah, point well taken. Eric, always a good talk, and you just go visit him at epautos.com. Check out the commentary at two great thinking people, along with their politics and so much more. And we'll talk next Wednesday. Thanks again.
Sounds good, Bill. Thank you.
It's 12 minutes after 7. This is KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford. We ran long with Eric, but, you know, it's always a good talk. We'll do that. We'll catch up on some other things and more of your calls at 770-5633. KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KPXG, Grants Pass.